This is Build and Analyze, a weekly news and discussion show about the world of iPhone, iPad, iOS, mobile web development, and more. This show is hosted by Marco Arment. He is the co-founder of Tumblr, the creator of Instapaper, and by me, I'm Dan Benjamin, and this episode is sponsored by SourceBits.com, providing software design and development services for iOS, Android, Mac, and the web. SourceBits is at the bleeding edge of emerging technologies. They have deep experience and a successful track record that ensures your idea will be transformed into a functional, well-tested, and visually stunning world-class app. You can check them out at SourceBits.com. And also by MailChimp.com, who makes it easy to design email newsletters and share them on social networks, integrate web services that you already use. You'll love mixing and matching MailChimp's templates, features, and integrations to fit your own needs. It's like your personal newsletter publishing platform, Marco. And they just doubled their free plan, too. So now you can send, I don't know how they do this, 12,000 emails a month to 2,000 subscribers. There's never been a better time to join. So check them out at MailChimp.com. And now we may begin the show.
Great. You sure? I mean, we can talk about email some more if you want. I love email.
Do you really?
No.
But we've been getting a lot about this show. Most of it's still about people who either want us to continue to or stop talking about coffee.
Now, that being said, I think the people who like the coffee talk are so far dramatically outnumbering the ones who don't.
Well, it's weird. I get a whole different set of email than you. But you know what? That's fine. We can talk. Nescafe released some kind of new instant coffee. Did you hear about that?
Yeah, somebody told me about that on Twitter.
Yeah.
Wow. It's instant coffee that includes sugar and some kind of dry milk thing.
Right.
It's the worst.
It's the worst possible thing you could imagine for someone like you. For me, maybe wouldn't be so.
Well, it's a really great product for people who don't like coffee.
Yeah.
Which is most people. It's a great product for people who don't like bad coffee.
Uh-huh.
Because people who are served bad coffee add milk and sugar to it.
Right.
Because you can add milk and sugar to anything and it becomes better.
Yeah. That's mostly true.
I mean, look, how do you get kids to eat things that are healthy that don't taste very good? You add either dairy, sugar, or both.
All right. Well, in any case, we're not actually going to be talking about coffee because there's too many other great things. And here's the big announcement. I got my Verizon iPhone. I'm back.
That's great.
I'm back.
Welcome back to the to civilization.
I'm back. And it feels great. You know, have you ever had you own a house now. I don't know if it's the right time of year for this, but have you ever had like a full, you spend the whole day outside on a big project, and especially if it's like August, you know, and you're like disgusting by the end of the day, you're covered in dirt and you've been, you know, working out there and it just, you're stinking and you've got, you know, cement stuck to you where you were redoing a thing and whatever. And then you smash three of your fingers with a hammer and it's the end of the day and you come in and you're just and then you get in the shower 30 minutes later, you're like, you feel complete, like a completely new person.
So it sounds like you really enjoyed having an Android phone.
You know, I didn't realize how much I didn't enjoy it until I got this iPhone 4. I hate to say it. And you know what, there isn't an opportunity for people to say, oh, I told you so, because I never said that the Android was great. I always said I just want an iPhone on Verizon. I said, you know, the nicest thing I ever said about it was it's not bad. And that remains. It's not bad. And for the average person who really doesn't care, who just wants a phone that like they can also do email and stuff on, it's really okay. But I really did miss that iPhone. I'm so glad to have it back. You know, you like the coffee analogies. You probably wake up and have coffee right away, right?
Usually I make it right after breakfast.
You ever had to wait like an extra hour or two, and then you drink that coffee, and you're like, oh man, I needed that.
Well, actually, I do that now with the show. I don't drink coffee before the show.
Really?
Yeah, because
it's 11:15 a.m.
Yeah, I know. Well, I wake up at like 9:30, so it's
true.
Not that big of a deal. But yeah, I find that I talk a little too fast, and I increase the chance of stuttering if I have coffee before the show, so I don't.
Well, you know what I'm saying, though. You know the analogy.
Oh, sure.
So you have that, and you're like, that's what I was thinking of.
So I'm really curious to know, now that we're talking about daily morning rituals, do you still have the daily installed?
I haven't launched it since the second day, but I haven't removed it.
So I still have it. So and I should explain, at the last show I was lamenting that I may have to buy a second iPad, first generation, which is frustrating to buy now, knowing that the second iPad's coming out relatively soon, probably.
Yeah.
And I did indeed end up going out and buying one, because it's
because this dude just sent us an email. I'll tell you what, I'm gonna reply to him then.
You can have it if you want.
We got this great email from this guy, and he says, dearest Marco, pardon this interruption in what must be an excruciatingly busy and tedious time for you checking email, but I should like to offer this magnificent piece of technology created by Apple. It is known as an iPad. I mean, he went on, it was very nice, and he talks about how it's meticulous. He's never actually touched the screen with human hands.
It has a screen protector on it.
Everything.
It has a really nice case. Everything's in mint condition.
I'm buying it. If you don't want it, I thought, and at the end of it, he didn't say Marco or Dan, actually. To be honest, he didn't say it. He just started writing in the email, and I'm thinking, yeah, I want this thing. And then at the end, he says, anyway, Marco. I'm like, oh, it's for Marco. Dang. But now that I hear you, so you did buy one.
I did, yeah. I had to issue a pretty big release this week for readability, actually, because I'm doing a special Instapaper build, a special edition of the Instapaper app.
Let's talk about that. That was another big request. So let's talk. Please add that to your list for today's show, boss.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, I don't like typing during the show. I don't like making noise.
I'll remember it.
I have my mouse in. Have you seen this? What's it called? It's the Mobi Magic Charger. Have you seen this thing?
No.
It's like do you use the Magic Mouse?
Yeah, I have one. I use it more than any other mouse, probably.
So, yes.
Yes, but okay. There's a qualifier.
All right. Somebody made this company called Mobi, which, as far as I can tell, this is their first product. They made this replacement battery cover that includes two little rechargeable batteries and then this little inductive charger. So you just set the mouse on top of this little inductive charger.
What's it called?
It's called the Magic Charger. But the company is called Mobi, M-O-B-E-E.
M-O-B-E-E.
It was like $60, which is a bit steep, but it's very well done as far as I can tell. I had a little bit of trouble getting the cover on at first, like the battery thing on at first, but it works fine now. And it's great. Like, it looks really nice. It looks, very Apple-y. It's this really thin little white base. And it plugs in via USB, so I appreciate not having another power brick to plug in somewhere. And the only thing is it doesn't hold a lot of charge, because they, in order to accommodate the charging circuitry and everything, they instead of using two AA rechargeable cells, they use two AAA cells, which are a lot smaller. So that's the only flaw, is that it doesn't really hold that much of a charge. But I haven't had it die yet. But I do notice that the percentage ticks down a lot faster.
This is the Magic Charger, wireless charger for Magic Mouse, it says.
Yep. Yeah, because it's, well, I mean, the charger needs a wire to power itself. But the mouse, it's just inductive. You just stick it on there. There's no metal contact. It's like an electric toothbrush charger. You just kind of set in those things.
Yeah.
Anyway,
and the Palm,
that thing's pretty cool.
Pixie had that kind of charger too. That was the only negative thing my wife had to say about the iPhone. She's like, I'm so glad to be done with this Palm Pixie, and so glad to have an iPhone. But keep in mind, I offered her to get her an iPhone for the first the first generation, the second, and the third. She kept saying no, and now finally she came around. And she loves it, but she says that was the one great feature that I wish the iPhone had. Was that inductive charging?
See, I don't necessarily know how much that matters. Like, to me, if I'm gonna not charge something, it's usually because I forget to charge it. If it's an iPhone, I don't really have that problem, because I always dock it for usually syncing music and podcasts.
Right.
I think requiring you to dock it to sync stuff is great. it's not, I know it's not everyone's favorite, but it forces all of us, geeks and non-geeks included, it forces all of us to charge these things at some point. And, you know, a lot of people, if somebody misuses your product,
right?
Like, let's say you have an iPhone and you just never charge it. And so the battery is always dead or almost dead. You probably know people who treat their stuff like this.
Oh, sure.
To them, they see that as a flaw with the product. Even if it's subconscious, they still have a negative opinion of their use of that product. And so that actually looks bad for the product. And Apple is fairly good at minimizing the ways people can do that. I wrote a blog post a while back called something like avoiding the ability to give your customers the gun to shoot themselves in the foot. Although I used far fewer words because I had time to edit it. But I think, you know, by Apple forcing us to plug in our things to do a pretty common operation of syncing music, I think that A, it forces us to back up because it also backs it up, which is great. And B, it forces us to charge it at least sometimes. And it kind of gets you in the habit of when you're at your desk, you stick the phone in the cradle or whatever, or use the cable. I really don't like that new iPhones don't come with docks. I think that's crap. The very first one did, and all the subsequent ones haven't, and that's driven me nuts.
Well, and it's $30 for the dock.
I know, and you open it up, and you're like, this, you got to be kidding. Like, this little thing is $30, and you know there are some third party ones, but they're all about the same price, and most of them are bigger and uglier. So I just get the Apple ones every time. But it's like each iPhone works more.
Yeah, we have like a little charging station sort of set up in the corner of our, you know, of our, near our kitchen. And, you know, now we've got to get, because we had the induction charger for the Palms, and then we had the iPad dock sitting there. But the iPhone 4 doesn't really fit into that. You can kind of wedge it, but I don't like that.
Yeah.
So now I've got to get another thing.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and like I have now this drawer full of my old iPhones. It's also now full of all these docks, because every dock is slightly different. Every time a new iPhone comes out, you have to get a new dock for it, because the shapes of the bottom are just a little bit different, and the docks from Apple fit really snugly. So you really can't. I think there was one. I think the iPhone 4 would kind of fit the 3G's dock. Like if you went back a few generations, I think that one would fit or something like that. But for the most part, you're spending $30 every time.
Right.
Every time a new iPhone comes out. For a new, very small piece of plastic that you look at and you wonder why it costs $30. But this is true. I don't know. I don't want to go too far off topic. Although,
No, it's your show.
So in electronics retail, I used to work a job at Staples when I was in college, you know, just selling computers and crap. It was fine as far as retail jobs go. But I learned a lot about the retail world. I encourage everybody who is a teenager or a college kid to work at a retail job at least once.
Yeah.
You really learn a lot.
Great advice.
And so I learned why things like video game controllers and USB cables cost so much in stores. And it's because the profit margins on the big ticket items, computers, game systems, and it's at Staples, it was printers. The margins on those are very, very small. A laptop that costs $1,200 might have a profit margin to the store of like $20. I mean, it's really very, very small profits.
Mm-hmm.
And so they make a really big deal out of selling attachments, which are accessories, basically. Any kind of accessory that they can kind of talk you into when you buy the big ticket item, which costs a lot of money if you bought it by itself. When you're buying the big ticket item, you don't see it as much because it's relatively a small amount of money. So a great example of this is why printers don't come with USB cables, except Epson's, because Epson has said, screw it, we want our customers to be happy. But although our printers will make a lot of random noises every time you look at them. So besides that, though, so every printer doesn't come with USB cable anymore. And so you have to buy the printer, and then the people in the store say, oh, well, you need a cable for this. And even if you say you already have a cable, when I was at Staples, they gave us these little booklets. I was supposed to carry it around with me. I mean, I didn't. But I was supposed to carry this booklet around. And whenever a customer would have an objection to my suggestion that they buy something extra with their thing, I was supposed to look up the objection in this book, and then it would tell me how to respond. And so it was like if they said I already had a cable,
right.
Well, I was supposed to tell them, well, you need one of these new gold-plated cables to ensure error-free, faster printing.
Oh, boy.
And, yeah, I mean, it's complete crap. Everything they told you to say was complete crap. Almost none of it was true. And it was like, oh, well, I already have paper at home. Well, you can never have too much paper.
Yeah.
You know, you don't want to run out of ink right in the middle of the night when you have a report due the next day.
Oh, boy.
All that, you know, we were told to say all this crap.
How long were you there?
And the reason, just about a year in college.
Well, that's a long time, though, to deal with that.
Actually, it might have only been like 6 months. I don't even remember. Something like that. It was a little while.
Yeah.
But for a college kid, that's a while.
Yeah, sure.
And the reason why is because all of these products have insanely high profit margins. All the accessories, cables, even like extended warranties, those are almost 100%. That's why they push them. So like pretty much anything they push you really hard on. So like you go to Best Buy, you buy a TV, they will push those monster cables on you like crazy. And the reason why both Best Buy and Monster Cable have infinite money is because like, you know, the Monster Cable, it might sell for $100 for some stupid cable that you can get online for $3.
Monoprice.com? Monoprice.com is your best friend if you need cables.
Oh, yeah, Monoprice.
Love them. If they, I'll tell you, I recommend them to everybody so much that if they did have a referral program, I could quit working and just refer them. I mean, everybody that I know that I've turned on to that, they're like, where has this site been? And let me just tell you, they're not a sponsor or anything, but they are so good, and their prices, like you can get, you know, a 15-foot HDMI cable for like $5, and it's going to be as good as the $100 monster cable, you know?
Oh, yeah. I mean, my one caveat to that is that I bought a lot of things from Monoprice, and I had my credit card stored there, which I'm not sure was intentional, but anyway.
Okay.
They got hacked about a year ago.
Yeah.
I remember they shut down their whole store for like a week to deal with it. Well, my credit card number was stolen. That was the only time it's ever happened to me. I buy so much stuff online. The only time it's ever happened to me was Monoprice, and I had to get a new credit card. That was a pain. You have to go around changing every account that auto bills your credit card. And you know, I have tons of stuff. I have like web hosting, you know, tons of stuff that bills me for like $5 a month or something. So all these little stuff I had to go around and change. But
terrible.
Otherwise, Monoprice is great as long as I don't get hacked again. And I suggest maybe using PayPal as your payment method instead.
Yeah, I don't say. I mean, this is a weird thing. I don't save my credit card on any site. I just enter it in.
Yeah, I usually do. Amazon, I do because they just make it really easy, and I buy so much stuff from them. But I usually don't either. But anyway, all those cables and stuff, you know, Monster will charge Best Buy like $20, and then Best Buy will charge you $100.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, these things cost Monster like $3.
Maybe.
probably even less than that. You know, most of that is the giant connector on the end that says Monster.
Right.
So anyway, I don't know where I was going with that. But let's talk about the daily. Because we talked about it a lot last week.
Yeah.
And, you know, I should say, to combat some of the feedback that we got via email, that I just love Fox News. It is a respectable news organization, and I love the Republican Party, for which it's obviously attached to. And I think we should talk more about politics in this show.
We could make this a politics show. I mean, that would be great.
We have everything else in this show. Thank you for all that email, fans of Murdoch.
Right.
It was so sensibly written.
Right. Well, my understanding is that if you send an email on behalf of Fox News to the host of any show that disparages it, you get a free subscription to The Daily.
Oh, okay. So let me ask you about that. So I have The Daily. You said you haven't launched it really much.
I did the first, you know, the first day or two and saw the wait time and stopped after that.
So, and John Gruber wrote this great article about the performance, and this is what I wanted to talk about. Performance is a feature. This is a common saying, but I really want to talk about this. This is a big deal. The Daily is painful to use. You can do it, but it really hurts when you launch it and you have to wait a minute for new content to download, and then you have to you know, have all this lag in the interface when you do simple swipes and things get ignored. The problem is that, first of all, performance makes your product look good when it's done right. One of the reasons why geeks love Google so much is that they were, back in the day, the fastest search engine to return results by far, and they're still incredibly fast. And whenever a page, like a web page, this is a big deal actually, because the web interfaces are so much slower just by nature than a native interface. Whenever a web app or a web page loads very, very quickly, people perceive it as being better. The other thing is, and you can, I think Yahoo has some public studies on this, but the amount of time it takes to load at which people will start giving up and going back or thinking less of this website is not very much. Like, people have very low tolerance for latency on the web. And I think it's because they're used to just plowing through so much stuff, you know, navigating, going back and forth between wherever they came from and your site. I think the temptation is always to get through things as quickly as possible and then move on. And if your website takes a little too long to load, they'll just cancel it and, you know, close that tab or hit back and or click a different link and move on without even ever seeing it. So performance is a very big deal. Now, in a native app, the factors are a little bit different, but it's similar needs. In that, so for the daily, for instance, this is actually one of the most common complaints about the daily is that a lot of swipe gestures seem to not do anything, or you have to repeat them, or like it seems like gestures get canceled or ignored. Much of this is because the tap targets are too small in some cases, and you know, certain things aren't intuitive. But I think a lot of the time it's just about performance. You know, if you click something and you don't get any feedback, we as geeks might not, but regular people will click it again because they're used to things being unreliable, and you know, they think, oh, just hit the button again or just kick it, it'll work, you know, just like every other piece of technology, or reboot it.
Right.
But if you're doing gestures or controls or clicks to an app and you're not getting quick feedback, you feel like you're not in control, and then you get frustrated with it, or you start doubting your own abilities, or you think it's broken, and then that also leads to people not being happy with it. So it's really extremely important that you consider performance as a feature, not just this thing that you do at the end, not just this thing you add later, but you always have to have always have your product be responsive. Now, responsive doesn't mean fast necessarily. Like, if you have to do a big intensive operation, respond to the user instantly and then, you know, start a spinner or a loading animation or something.
Sure.
As long as it seems like the person's gesture was received in, you know, immediately, and the app acknowledges that somehow by showing that, okay, this worked, you did your thing, we got it, we're doing something, then the subsequent operation can take, you know, a while, and then it'll be fine. But you should always appear responsive, and this is one thing. I think it was you and Gruber who talk about how the iPhone is always really good about responsiveness for the most part, unless you installed 4.0 on a 3G.
Right, but yeah.
but for the most part, it's very, very responsive.
Very.
Especially compared to Android and WebOS and BlackBerry.
There's a big WebOS announcement happening later today, I think.
Oh, really?
Yeah, HP is having something.
HP tablet thing.
Yeah. But speaking of those other ones, absolutely, and it's very true. I was watching my wife enter in the, unlock screen for her Palm Pixie, which is about a year old. And, you know, she was going in there and saying, okay, what's left? What do I have to pull off of here? You know, there were some pictures and things that she wanted to take off. And just watching her and watching how it was sort of, even on the unlock screen, how it was just, even though it responded, it was just that, just split second behind. It's that little detail of not, I'm not talking about missing her keystrokes, missing things. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about just that slight latency is enough to make you think that it's a piece of crap.
Right. I think it makes you feel like you're less in control.
You're less in control, and it breaks your trust.
Right. Like when you operate a very well-performing touch interface, like most iPhone and iPad situations, it really is very tactile. You really feel like you are touching these things and they're moving based on your touch. You feel like you are completely in control. But when you touch a slowly performing thing and it jumps or it lags or it misses your gesture, you feel like you're kind of just along for the ride, and you're giving someone else directions, and they occasionally choose to follow them. It's a terrible, terrible experience. And you can still use these things, and people do, but they're not very happy about it, and they're not very loyal to it. This is why I really think that we're going to see a lot of Verizon iPhone converts. I think a lot of the – I mean, I've said this before. I think a lot of the Android sales on Verizon have been to people who, if the iPhone were available next to it, they would have gotten the iPhone.
Oh, yeah.
And many of these are on two-year contracts, so this is going to be a slow process for people who want to convert. But I bet – especially look at a two-year-old Android device. I mean, there aren't many around these days because it's still a fairly young operating system. But when you figure the average upgrade time for a cell phone in the U.S. is 18 months and the average contract is 2 years, usually people – the reason why it's shorter is to account for both geeks like us buying phones before our contracts end, mm-hmm. and also people who lose or break their phones and just pay a little bit extra to upgrade a little bit early. But also, I think – doesn't Verizon – offer you a full subsidized upgrade like 6 months ahead of time of your contract ending?
It depends. They used to have one thing called free every two, and then they had a discount. But my understanding is they've gotten rid of that now.
Oh, okay.
But I in response to what you're saying as far as the switching and things, that the Street was reporting that Verizon iPhone sales topped 500,000, but the way that they actually open the article is they say that, of course, record sales, we know that, but they say it may have exceeded, well, they're saying 500,000 phones on the first day, but we don't really know. That sounds like more like speculation.
Yeah, I don't know where they would have gotten a reliable number from, but that's, I mean, unless somebody in Verizon leaked it. It's pretty good, though. I mean, it's...
The record was 100,000 droids when those came out. That was their previous record to this.
And was that available in retail on that day?
That's
a
good question.
A lot of people want to walk into the store and buy it.
Yeah.
And so to sell 500,000 on day one when it's only a 3 a.m. to 5 a.m. pre-order and then you have to stop accepting orders, that'd be pretty impressive. Even if that number is correct, that'd be great.
Well, the big numbers I think will start to happen, is it today or tomorrow when I think it's tomorrow when people can actually go into a store and buy one.
Yeah, you can order them online today, and then from Apple, I think somebody just said that, and then tomorrow you can get them. And I just saw they have a deal where it's going to be in a bunch of Walmart stores tomorrow too. That's a big deal.
Oh, yeah.
So I think one thing that Android really does not do well is long-term serving of devices. They have this horrible situation with pushing updates through the carriers and through the manufacturers and everything. And the result is that you can have an Android phone that's 6 months old that no longer ever gets another update after that. And that's great for gadget bloggers and geeks like us because we keep buying new phones, at least they do. I sure don't. I buy an iPhone once a year. But anyway, it's great for people who keep buying the newest, coolest thing for review or just for the technical curiosity. But it's very expensive, and most people can't or won't do that.
Right.
Most people buy a phone on a contract that's very subsidized, and when the contract is almost over, they go get another one, and that's also subsidized for another contract. So one thing that's going to be very important here is customer loyalty to the platform, because we're seeing right now BlackBerry has a massive installed base. They have for quite a while, but nobody really says BlackBerry is about to take over the world or anything like they do about Android.
Right.
Because customer loyalty to BlackBerry is not that great these days. A lot of Android and iPhone converts come from BlackBerry, and they're not really attracting a lot of new customers. So that's not very good for them. Now, Android, I think, is going to have a similar problem because you have issues like the updates hardly ever being applied to older devices, and even just devices not being built that well. Like, a lot of these devices have very serious flaws, whether it's like a panel that always falls off, like the original Droid, or just really, really bad battery life, like almost every Android device still. All these problems that if the iPhone had any of these problems, it'd be a massive news story. It'd be like Antenna Gate. It'd be this huge deal. Yeah, Consumer Reports would be yelling about it to get page views. It'd be this massive deal. Android, though, it's this little bullet point in the cons list at the end of the review, and then everyone forgets about it 2 weeks later when there's a new device to talk about. Mm-hmm. And then so there's that. There's the issue with the updates. I just think that people's satisfaction with Android devices is not going to be very good. I think it's going to be a lot like BlackBerry. You're going to have a group of core fans, and that's fine. They're not going to go anywhere. You'll have your core fans. But then I think the mass market is just going to be kind of, I don't know, just kind of, you know, they don't really, they like it, okay, I guess, but let's see what the new iPhone is like, you know? And I think when those people go in to buy their new phone over the next couple of years, I think they're going to be very susceptible to switching to the iPhone. Meanwhile, you have people who use iPhone after iPhone after iPhone. Most of them are not switching. The iPhones have very, very good customer satisfaction rates. They keep a lot of their customers long term, and then that's what I'm saying. I really don't see good things for Android in that factor.
Yeah.
I mean, look, I mean, you're one right now.
Yeah.
Right? They just lost a customer.
I guess they did, but I was never really a customer anyway. I saw it as like I was in a holding pattern, you know?
Well, and that's a very important distinction though. I think a lot of people, you know, I've said this before. I think the fight in the market was not this massive battle between iPhone and Android. It was between iPhone and Verizon. And if you, I overheard so many like coffee shop conversations and you know, real normal people conversations.
Yeah.
Real America. You know?
Yeah.
I overheard so many of these conversations where people were like, oh, I want to get an iPhone, but I want to stay on Verizon. You know, and they would often then go out and buy some kind of Android device.
Right.
They didn't really recognize it as that most of the time. And they
so
also
it's almost
really
like inflating Android user base in a way.
Very much so. I think most people who were willing to switch carriers to get the iPhone would have already done so sometime in the last 3 years. And so what you had left over was this very large number of Verizon subscribers who would have bought the iPhone, but it wasn't available on their carrier. And so they're like, oh, I'll get something else. And I think a very, very big portion of Android's US sales are from that crowd, which is not great for Android. It would be fine if Android was so incredibly good that everyone loved it so much that it would then make them diehard fans of Android. But I'm not really seeing that happening. I mean, I see it happening with geeks, and that's fine. Like, there's always going to be the portion of people who use Android because of what it offers that the iPhone doesn't offer. And that's fine. But I don't think the mass market is going anywhere near that. I don't know. Maybe that's just speculation. I guess we'll see over the next couple of years.
Yeah, well, that's the thing is
U.S. Android sales.
We're going to have to see. We're going to have to.
So, what do you think about the Motorola Zoom?
Well, I mean, the Super Bowl commercial was not that great.
A little weird.
It's a little weird. I guess it was supposed to be an update to the famous 1984 Mac commercial. I don't know, you know, I mean, it looks better. I was watching some videos of it, of people didn't, I think there was somebody who had a hands-on, maybe that was a different device. You know, I hope, to be honest, I hope it's great. I hope it's awesome. And I hope that whatever HP announces today for the new webOS tablet is awesome too. Because I think that will continue to, you know, here's the thing. Apple does a really, really great job of innovating on their own, right? I mean, they don't need a push from other people to innovate. And I think if you took away all their competitors right now with the culture within Apple and around Apple, with or without Steve Jobs, you would get great innovation and great products. But I think they do even better when there is competition in 2000, yeah. in 2011. I think when they feel like there are competitors out there, it's almost like, well, how can you do better if you're already doing 100%? Technically, you can't. But I feel like there's something there that where they respond very positively when, and look, I mean, they've created, they, you wrote we've talked about this, but you've wrote an excellent article, maybe it was about a year ago, where you basically said, before the iPhone, phones looked like this. After the iPhone, okay. phones look like this, and they all look like an iPhone now. And that's true. They made that dramatic change, and they did the same thing when the iPad came out. It's its first generation thing, and it really is changing things. And now everybody wants to do a tablet. Everybody's got to have a tablet. Well, now that there is going to be a tablet from everybody, there is going to be a tablet out there that everybody else has created, I think it's going to be really neat to see how the existence of tablets everywhere and the innovation that might come out of those, so we got to give them credit, they're going to innovate on some level, how that changes and pushes Apple to do newer and better things.
Right.
So, you know, I'm not particularly impressed with the Zoom from what I've seen of it. I wouldn't get one over an iPad, but I like the form factor of it. I thought that was pretty nice. What do you think?
I think so. I was looking up the specifications for it, and one thing is that it's the same weight as the iPad. It's a similar size, but it's $800, and there was that weird Best Buy thing where it looked like maybe you couldn't get Wi-Fi without buying a month of service.
Right.
If that was correct, we don't really know if that's actually correct. If that was just somebody misunderstood when they were writing it, but. So it might actually cost $820, say. That's a lot
for
a tablet. Now, granted, I've been wrong a lot whenever I've tried to predict that something would be too expensive for mass adoption. I'm always surprised by how much people are willing to pay for the gadgets they want, seemingly without regard to the U.S.'s current economic situation or anything else. That's one thing. I really thought the iPad sales would be slower because it's this $500 plus device that nobody really needs. It was just being sold purely on want.
Yeah, and now you've got two of them.
Now I have two. I got to figure something else to do with this. Once the new one comes out, I guess I'll figure something out.
Hey, just have a kid.
That's a good idea. All
Start
right.
now.
All right. But that'll be a good reason to have a kid.
Right.
I mean, I'm sure people have worse reasons, right?
Sure.
So anyway, I think the Zoom being priced at above $800, that to me is a really tough sell. But maybe it's just me that I'm not going to buy one. But I don't really see average people wanting to buy that. The iPad, I think, is so incredibly good that when people use one and touch one, they have to have one. It's just incredibly good. You know, as we mentioned earlier, a lot of that tactile feel and everything. The Zoom looks a lot more like... See, the iPad, I think, looks completely different from anything else that came before it. I think the Zoom looks like a big Android phone that happens to run this crazy new interface. And, like... The browser looked great, I thought. Although it still was weird when you'd scroll and you'd hit the end and it wouldn't do the rubber banding that the iPhone does. Mm. You scroll and it hits the end and it's just like a dead stop, like in a desktop browser. I thought that was weird, but maybe it's just I'm not used to it. But I just think for it to sell at that price to anybody besides geeks, it's going to have to be so incredibly good that the first time anybody ever touches one, they're so incredibly delighted by it, and they just want to keep using it, and they're just thrilled because that's what the iPad does for people. It's delightful to use one for the first time. You watch people; they're like, "Oh my god!" And they swipe through pictures, and you can touch web pages for the first time, and it's great. I don't. Maybe it's just because I'm not a big Android fan right now, but I don't really have a lot of faith that Android 3.0 or any version of Android anytime soon is going to be that good. There are always so many little rough edges. And every single version always has them. And every version says that, oh, well, this is fine for now, but in the next version, it's going to be awesome. You know, Android is always about to get really good. And every version comes out and it adds features. It can do new things, but the polish is never really there. There's always tons of rough edges. And so I just think with 3.0, first of all, I think the culture that allows that to be released with rough edges doesn't really ever change. But even from a more practical standpoint, 3.0 is so incredibly different from everything that came before it in the interface.
Yeah.
And it seems like they are really busting their butts to get it out there. So it's a massive amount of change. Seems like it's on a schedule crunch coming out for this product. I think that the odds of it being good and well-polished are low. Everything's working against them there. So this is a long-winded way of saying I really don't think it's going to sell that well.
Mm.
But I don't know. So here's some. So how much more time do we have?
Oh, we've got, 10 minutes.
All right, good.
But we still have to talk about your readability thing.
Oh, okay. So what do you want to know?
I would like to hear about this. I mean, we didn't get a chance to talk about it. A lot of people were saying as soon as the readability announcement came out, people were saying, "Oh, you've got to talk about this with Marco." And we didn't get a chance on the last show. So I thought it would be neat for you to just talk about a little bit about what that is. Readability, for people who don't know what this is, you can go to readability.com. But they call it distraction-free reading. And this sounds a lot like something that, Instapaper would be involved with. But this is actually what went into, if you're using the latest version of Safari and you're reading a blog post and you see that little, I forget what they call it.
Reader
is what they call it. And that does a similar thing that readability, which was an ARC, used to be just an ARC 90 page, and now it has its own domain and everything else. Basically, if you were on a web page that, for example, Daring Fireball, which is illegible, it's, the dark background, the white text, very small font, that you want to make look readable, you would hit the readability button, which used to be a bookmarklet in your bookmarks bar and is now a Safari extension, that it would, and you could customize how it would look, but it would format the page in a more legible, readable way, and it would also get rid of images or ads, things like that, and help you focus without distraction. And they recently sort of spruced up the whole thing and made readability.com a really pretty website, and they charge for it, but they give 70% of the membership fees to the people who make the content in some capacity. But that's not the part that I want to talk about. The part that I want to talk about is that apparently there's some deep stuff happening with this and Instapaper.
Sure, yeah.
So tell, what is that? People really want to hear you talk about this.
All right, yeah, sure. It's really it's fairly simple. I met with them a long time ago, and they're cool guys, and I wanted to be involved in what they were doing. And I love the whole payment end of it where – yeah, as you said, they pay publishers for what people read, and that money comes from people's monthly subscription fees to Readability. And it's very, very simple. Like, you take 70% of whatever the monthly fee is, and you divide it up evenly by everything you read. So if you read one page from Daring Fireball and one page from Marco.org, then me and John Gruber each get $175. It goes from there, and it just gets divided evenly for every month. So that's the idea of the service. And then with this, of course, they built in a very kind of Instapaper-like read later type service, which is great too, because it kind of needs that. And the reason we could have worked together in a number of ways, like we could have merged or something, but ultimately, we decided that it was fine having two different products that do this one common thing, but then all these other different things. So what they are doing is, so first of all, I have no interest in getting into the whole payment end. I don't really have the resources to deal with that, and I'd rather just boost up theirs and be involved with it. And they have no interest in trying to build a complex iPhone app, you know, for day one.
Yeah.
In addition to all the other stuff they had to do. So we're working together. Very simple. You know, if you like their Read Later service better, by all means, you can use it. You know, I won't be offended. If you like mine better, you can use mine, and you can even link your account from mine to there so that you can still use Instapaper.
Right.
But then all your reading activity is still reported to your readability account for the payouts, basically. So like you're counted. Like all the stuff you read on Instapaper is counted for the payouts. So, and then the other thing is I'm making their iPhone app. And so we just submitted it last night.
Oh, exciting.
Yeah, thanks. And it's a special build of Instapaper 233, and which actually doesn't exist in the App Store yet. So it's a special build of Instapaper that and by the way, making special builds is very, very easy. In Xcode, you just make a new target. And then if you set a compiler flag to say, like for that target, always send this define constant. Mm-hmm. Then you can go back into the code, and you can have a bunch of if defs everywhere that say, you know, if def is readability, then do this. Similar to like if debug, that sort of thing. So you really use the preprocessor to your advantage there. So making different targets is easy. I had to go through the whole process of having two different developer certificates and two different provisioning profiles and everything for different targets in the same project, which actually Xcode handles very well.
Mm.
And I'm also very impressed by the new thing where you can submit the binary from when you do build an archive in Xcode, after you do build and analyze, of course. When you do build an archive, in the archive window, there's a button that you can submit it right to the App Store, which worked perfectly for me. I was very, very happy with that because, like, I've been submitting apps since day one where the procedure was really a lot less graceful than this. So even the whole procedure of setting up the new developer certificate on their account and setting up all the provisioning and everything, boy, it's gotten a lot simpler.
Mm.
It's far better now than it ever was at the beginning. So anyway, yeah, so that's the deal. It's pretty straightforward. And you know, the readability service is not going to have like the app doesn't have all the features that the Instapaper app does, because there are certain features they don't implement. Like right now they don't have folders. So the whole folder interface is gone because they don't have them.
Right.
And the thing is, like, if you use that app, you're supporting Instapaper. If you use Instapaper, you're supporting Instapaper. And if you use readability, that's like at the service, you can tie it to Instapaper. So we're really working very well together, I think. And we'll see what happens. I have high hopes for this. I think, first of all, the website they made is killer. It's really, really good. I'm extremely. I hadn't even seen it during development until like the day before they launched it, and it's really good. And they have a Safari extension. Like, they have a lot of stuff out there on day one. I'm really impressed. So check it out. And their website honestly puts mine to shame.
It is an attractive website, but I mean they are sort of known for design, and you're more known for, I guess, you know, being a developer with a very minimalist aesthetic.
That's lucky. and that's, I'm a developer who can't draw and has no idea how to use color. So as a result, I avoid both of those things. For a while, the only graphic on Instapaper was the little read later example button on the front page. Now I could even have fewer graphics on the site now if I wanted to, except Internet Explorer and actually Windows in general has such incredibly poor Unicode support that I had to, like, the star icon. It was just a Unicode star before, and then I realized quickly that on Windows it would just be the box, the I don't know this Unicode character box. And on the Mac we're very lucky that all of Unicode in every language is always installed, and even on the iPhone and iPad. These small devices that have no RAM, no storage, they still manage to fit all of Unicode every font for every language. That's awesome. And on Windows, even modern day Windows, as far as I know, you still don't have all that stuff pre-installed. So I had to, the first star icon on Instapaper was literally a screenshot of the Unicode character that I took and made an image of so I could have it serve for stupid Windows.
Man. But it works, though. That's the funny, you know, you make fun of it, but it works.
Yeah, it were. I mean, now I got some icon. I have an icon set that was pretty decent. So
yeah.
I need a designer badly. This is another topic on the list is you need a designer. So I'll get to that at some point in the future. I'm working very hard on a big release, so I figure right after that I really want to make over the website. So we'll see.
We'll see. Well, that's about it, though, for this show. I think that's all the time we have. We don't have time to, you know, do any more topics.
Well, we have a great list for next week, then.
Yeah, yeah, and the week after.
Yeah, sounds great. Actually, well, wait a minute. Next week, I think I'm...
You're in Zealand.
Yeah, next week I'm in New Zealand for Webstock with everybody you
Everybody
know.
Else. All of the other hosts of... Now, most of my other hosts have offered to do makeup shows.
What does that mean?
That means, like, do an extra show, you know, this week.
Oh, yeah. Let's do it.
You want to do it?
Yeah.
All right. So we'll do that. We'll discuss it off air. And for those people who are joining us live, we appreciate it. Maybe we'll have another live show for you later in the week. And I think that's it, though, for this show. I mean, I don't really...
See, now everyone's going to know that the next show is going to be, like, fake.
Won't be fake. It'll still be you and me talking about
it. I guess most people listen to the podcast.
They won't know that, you know, the people that are listening to this now, they're like, oh, maybe I'll tune in live, you know. But it's pre-recorded for podcast people anyway.
I hope some massive news comes out that we won't even talk about.
Yeah.
Like that'll seem really strange.
Right. We'll be speculating about something during the show and
but yeah, it's already happened.
I've already happened, but I'll just overdub it. I'll come back in and overdub it.
Why didn't you guys talk about the web pad?
Right. What about Apple's surprise announcement of the iPhone 5 that came out? Why didn't you even mention it on the show?
Right.
All right. Well, that is it, though, for this week. So we'll say thanks to SourceBits.com and MailChimp.com. And I really hope people visit it because this is the thing. We have these sponsors. They actually, like... They're real sponsors, and if you guys don't visit the sponsors, that makes us look really bad. So, you know, there was a thing for a while where if you had, like, Google Ads on your site, and you said on your site, please click the Google Ads, that Google would cancel you and get rid of you. That doesn't...
That's true. Well, something tells me, by looking at the sites that run Google Ads these days, that whatever team at Google was responsible for monitoring AdSense quality is no longer there. Or they're out to a very long break. Cause,
yeah.
Or maybe it's there's probably nice people on that team. I should actually say they need a lot more people.
Yeah, yeah. Well, anyway, and that doesn't apply here. I can say to people, if you're legitimately interested in either of those two companies, please go there and visit them. I mean, don't go there just to go there, but go there and check it out, sign up, that kind of thing. Because it really does help us. And Marco, you have I'll be seeing you virtually. You know, we'll do another show soon. But have a great trip over there to New Zealand. Safe trip and good flight and enjoy your conference and your talk. That's webstock.com. Is that it?
Yep.
Okay.
This is one of those awkward situations where I can't say you too.
Yeah, because I wasn't invited.
Happy birthday. Oh, you too. Enjoy the flight. Yep.
All right. See you soon.
See ya.